The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Shane. Minister for Transport, Climate, Energy and the Environment, Dara O'Brien, joins me now to talk about the future of Irish transport and the government's climate plans, as billions have been committed to both departments under the National Development Plan, from the commencement of the Metrolink to the slow development of offshore wind. The minister has a lot on his plate. Minister, good morning and
good morning,
welcome.
Pat. Thank you very much.
Now, let's just talk about something that came up in the conversation with Ger Herbert and a texter immediately saying, one single static camera in a capital city in Europe, it's a joke.
Yeah, look, road safety has got to be the absolute priority for road users, cyclists, pedestrians and drivers alike. And this is the first static camera of a number that will be rolled out. We've average speed limits being tested as well across the country too. People will notice that, in particularly on the national routes. And obviously enforcement is key to all of that too, and detection. And that's what these will do, I think.
One camera in Dolphin's Barn starting from Friday, and it will do speed only. It won't do mobile phone detection. Yeah. It won't do anything else.
No, unquestionably, we need to do more, and we will do more. And that's what you've referenced the National Development Plan as well. There in the review of that, which gives us the capital to roll out more road infrastructure, certainly rail, but also detection devices such as the static speed camera. I like our road safety has improved over the decades. And, you know, I was listening earlier on to the Dublin Commuter Coalition as well on your show in that regard. Like, every road death is one too many. But we have seen a significant reduction over a 10-15 year period. But we need to redouble our efforts to do that. And detection of speeding, and indeed of other things such as mobile phone devices being used, and that is critical.
So is that going to come? It is. Cameras to detect that kind of bad behaviour.
Yes, it will. And we've already, if you look at the work that's been done by Garda Síochána on the M50, which is our busiest road in the country, that we have detection there in relation to mobile devices and other drivers through a mobile detection unit.
But in terms of the legislation that might be required for static cameras to, you know, not manned by human beings, but just done automatically, and maybe even AI being deployed. Do we have the kind of legislation in place that would allow us to deploy this kind of technology?
Well, the legislation right now will underpin detection. I don't see any difficulty with that at all.
It doesn't matter whether it's automated or human.
No, because if you look at even with the vans that we have at the moment, not every instance are they manned. Like, we've speed readers that have been there for a while that don't actually clock detections, but they do actually have an impact, particularly in urban areas, of slowing people down when they actually read the speed. Like, fundamentally, if we think about it this way, though, it is the responsibility of the driver. There's personal responsibility here as well. And we often hear of cases where people are exceeding the speed limit by tens of kilometres per hour. And that's just not acceptable. So, you know, detection is important. Personal responsibility is also important.
Now, you want to reduce the speed limit from 50 to 30 in urban areas, not in every single street, but in a lot of the suburban streets where children are playing and cyclists are operating and so on. But you've left it at the discretion of the councils.
One of the first things we did, by the way, if I could say, under the Phase 2 action plan, was actually to reduce the rural and local roads and to reduce the default speed limit to 60 kilometres. That's on about 80% of our roads across the country. That's done. So we take road safety really seriously, myself and Sean Candy, work directly.
Detection, I mean, Jonathan Healy was on saying he's never seen anyone on these now reduced to 60 roads being hauled in for
I don't know
speeding.
Well,
and yet most people do far more than 60 because they used to do an 80. They keep doing it.
Well, look, one of the recommendations from the action plan, and one of the things that we've implemented straight away, actually in the first couple of months of coming into government and coming into this portfolio, was to reduce the default to 60 kilometres on the rural local roads. Now, in relation to the urban ones, and that was the part of your discussion earlier on, the urban areas, yes, we intend to do this in conjunction with the local authorities.
But it's at their discretion.
Well, no, it's with their advice. And I think that's important too. It's with their advice and their local knowledge. Because when you're looking at urban roads, like, we've already reduced speed limits around schools. We've the Safer Routes to School program, which I was very involved in the previous Dáil, actually. And we're investing heavily in that. That's allowing kids walk and cycle to school safely and reducing cars around our schools. And I think people will see that all across the country. We've hundreds of schools involved in that. Now, in relation to this, we're doing it with the local authorities because we do need their local knowledge. It's not a question that you could just have a default and then change from the default up. We're looking to do it the other way.
But aren't you trying to shoehorn cycle lanes in where there really is no room for cycle lanes?
I don't know.
And so there is one philosophy that says, let everyone share the road and everyone will be much more careful once they're alert to the fact that they are sharing with an e-scooter, with a bicycle, with a push bike, whatever it might be.
Well, there are large parts of our road network that are shared, but I think safe walking and cycling is something that I support and that I want to see us expand. We're spending €360 million a year of exchequer money in relation to what's called active travel, which is providing those facilities for people, that not just for recreation, so they can walk and they can cycle and they can scoot to work and school in a safe manner. And we've seen
Isn't it a bit of a let off for the scooter people, active travel? I mean, you stand on the scooter and accelerate. That's it. That's not active. And the same with an e-bike.
Well,
that's not active travel.
Look, when I come into town and I'm coming up from North Dublin and I see the amount of people cycling in through Fairview, all the way through Fairview into town safely now, all the way in from, you know, lots of our networks. Limerick now has a fantastic infrastructure there for walking and cycling. And people respond to it. Like, this is a good thing. You know, it's not only good in relation to active travel and activity, but also good in relation to reducing car usage and increasing public transport usage.
I mean, it does make sense in terms of pollution and car use and so on, that e-scooters are used. However, you probably are aware there's a plague of muggings with e-scooters and, in fact, someone actually being stopped and the scooter taken from them by two lads arrive up on one scooter, attack a girl, take her scooter, and the two of them scoot off undetected. No identification on their scooter, no way of knowing. And the UK are talking about licensing scooters and insuring them.
Yeah, that's something that we will be looking at, because I think I'm saying that to you now, we will look at it. I think this, Eamon, my predecessor, did some work on this as well. Where a lot of people, most people who use scooters use them, you know, safely and appropriately. But we have seen we've seen injuries as well. We've seen people using them inappropriately. And some of the scooters now are quite high powered too, as you'll know, and some of the e-bikes as well that you see. But like these are the changes that we've got to grapple with, and we've got to look forward as well. Like the way people commute, the way people travel is changing too. Thankfully, more and more people are pivoting to public transport. Like we saw 330 million public transport journeys last year alone.
Sure.
And that's a record number because we've been investing in public transport. And this year, if I could say really critically, this Thursday actually, we'll be signing the contracts for the first Bus Connects route, which is the first bus corridor that we'll be building from Liffey Valley into Dublin. 12 of them have now come through planning. 5 of them are unencumbered. So we'll be able to get moving on this, which is going to transform actually bus travel within all of our cities, not just within Dublin.
And the Bus Connects system allows buses to have priority at junctions and so on. So it should work very well. And I don't hear too many complaints about the nature of the service that is provided by Bus Connects. The objections are normally about they've taken away my parking space or they've had to take down trees or whatever.
The physical elements of it do change communities, but it will transform it. I think, if I could say very quickly, the Bus Connect, the cross-city routes already that have been brought in by Bus Connects are working really, really well. And that's why people are responding to that, because what we need to work on is continue to put the customer first and at the centre of everything we do, continue to improve reliability and punctuality and frequency of service.
Okay. People will take rapid transit when it's available, and we know that DART in Dublin City and some of the commuter rail, they're very quick and very efficient when they're on time, and by and large the DART's on time. The Lewis is also a very popular service. Metro.
Yes.
Metrolink finally getting the money to start its operation. Mick O'Leary says it's a waste of time. Waste of money. Because after all, the airport's only 14 kilometres out of the centre of the city. Why would you spend billions and billions and billions to do that?
Well, it's not just about the airport, firstly. This is about the North Dublin region, Dublin, right into the south of Dublin, but the whole region as well. And the cost-benefit analysis is very clear that for every €1 invested, €4 will be returned.
Isn't it normally the case, though, with public investment, for every euro invested at the beginning, it costs €4 to deliver it at the end?
This won't, okay? I think you rightly said it. It's very significant for Dublin in particular. It's the first time a government has actually funded a project and put money where our mouth is. I went to the launch of this in 2005 when I was a councillor.
20 years ago.
20 years ago. So I think this is a case in point about how not to deliver public transport infrastructure. we are a very...
It's where your party wasn't in government in that 20
well,
years.
Well, we were part of it. I can tell you that I pushed for this project because I do believe in it. I do believe it's needed. It will unlock further economic development and housing development along that route. We have one of the few international airports that's not actually served by a rail link. It needs to be, but it isn't just about the airport. The airport is critical to this, but it's about, particularly if you look at the area of Swords and beyond, that is the size of a city now, that providing a rail route into the city that can carry 20,000 passengers an hour and will go on in through Dublin into the south of the city.
What is the projected frequency of those trains? I mean, well, at peak time, because peak you won't have them all the time.
No, at peak times, you're looking at every 3 to 4 minutes.
Okay.
And what we have done, what's different now, is that we have our own delivery group. We have a chief executive, Sean Sweeney, is set up, and his management team here, who's just purely focused on delivering this project. What we're awaiting very shortly, I hope, is the full planning permission. And I am told that that will be in the coming weeks. And that will be a very significant piece, because then from there we will be able to actually go out and to procure this project, to put it out to tender, and to get moving and to get shovels in the ground and delivering this. A lot of preparatory work has been done along the route. A lot of the surveying work has been done. This will transform our city and our county, and is an investment that is right and proper that we make on behalf of our
people. Are you torn, though, between the kind of investment, okay, the government and Jack Chambers and Pascal can give you a certain amount of money, but they can designate it for one area or another, mm-hmm. but you're torn between things you might do for the climate and yet you might build a road. And Eamon Ryan made quite clear in his ministry that the green agenda got priority over the roads agenda. How do you see it?
Well, I believe actually in this period of this government, we're going to deliver and invest substantially more in public transport than we will in roads. But we need roads too. We need to, we need to improve connectivity, particularly in our regions. And new roads are important. And we've a strong roads program between now and 2030. We also need to improve existing roads that are there. So it's not one or the other. I don't think Eamon, in fairness, was a proponent of one or the other either. I'm going to continue to invest in active travel, as I've said, at a greater rate than what was done previously. But if you're in areas, particularly in rural Ireland as well, I met councillors recently from the Cavan area, for argument's sake, that has a very, intricate road network there that's very rural, that is of poor standard as well. And there are counties like that that need to ensure that we have their roads upgraded and improved on existing roads and improving our connectivity between our cities and our regional towns. But we will invest more in public transport in this 5 years than we will in roads.
Now, the question of public transport, many people enjoy taking public transport, but some people are fearful of taking it. On one of the Lewis lines, particularly at certain times of the day, it's hazardous on the buses. I'm just looking at a piece here. Number of antisocial behaviour incidents on Irish rail services increased by 50% last year. And that whole question of, do you have a transport police? And if so, what powers they have?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a matter of serious concern. I think, firstly, just to say is that those who don't use public transport have a worse perception of it. But it's one of the reasons why people who don't use it because they believe it's unsafe. Those who use it, the surveys are much more positive. Having said that, there are certain black spots within our public transport service. And I'd say two things. We've started the work already on the creation of a transport security force. Myself and Jim O'Callaghan have met on that. We will have to bring in legislation. I think it will get support.
Separate from the Gardaí, in turn.
Yeah, separate from the Gardaí, but working with the Gardaí. And it will supplement the work the guards are doing. And I want to talk about that in a brief moment. It is important, though. This will be a state security force. Looking after transport will be uniformed. We'll cover
powers of arrest?
Yes, and powers of detention as well. And what we're looking at is powers of pursuit, akin to the airport police. The difference, if you look at the airport police, is they have a specific campus. Okay, obviously, if you're on a Lewis line and someone, does something on a Lewis and actually gets off the Lewis, you'll need someone to be able to pursue that person. But this is something that we will deliver. It will require legislation. I've already worked with, as I said, with the Minister for Justice on this, and indeed with my own team. And really importantly, too, is the stakeholders. Like, I've met with commuters under our transport security task force that we have, which is people like public transport users.
Okay, how soon will we have that?
It will take. I would say 9 to 12 months to get the legislation and everything passed through this. Okay, we've got to draft the legislation. We've got to amend bylaws that are existing already in relation to authorised officers. And I would hope that we would be able to start recruiting for the Transport Security Force next year. Could I just mention the Garda EPAT very quickly, because it's not widely known. The Garda run an operation called Operation Salt that has been very, very successful. And when you look at the arrest numbers and convictions, and this is particularly focused at incidents on public transport, there's a real focus by the guards right now. And what I want to do is be able to assist them. To be fair to our bus and train operators, people will also see greater private security right now in place. So we're going to continue to do that whilst the Transport Security Force is...
How soon do you think we'll have a transport police?
I think we can start recruiting by the end of next year.
The end of next year?
Yeah, that's...
Why does it take so long?
Well, if I'm looking at the legislation, if I'm looking at recruitment and getting everything through, if we get a fair win through the Dáil and the Shannon, we need to draft the legislation too. That's not simple, but it can be done and it will be done. I just want to be realistic with people. But in the meantime, we'll continue to support the Gardaí, and we will continue to support our public transport operators to ensure that they have their private security in place, which they do right now.
Now, you have responsibility for climate and for energy and environment as well as transport. The question of windmills, it's very slow. The development particularly of offshore and onshore objections at every hand's turn. Mm-hmm. And you can understand, I've talked to people who lived within the flicker of a windmill, and it is very irritating. But, you know, that's only people who are few and far between in those particular areas. But why is it so slow?
If I could say first, we've done really well in onshore renewables. We're actually a world leader in relation to onshore wind. Last year, about 40% of our electricity was generated through renewables, and the vast majority of that through onshore wind. We'll have a further auction this year. So we do well on that, and we've shown what can be done. In relation to offshore, we've 5 projects in planning at the moment on the East Coast. And actually just this week, the Taoiseach convened a meeting with the operators that I attended and spoke to as well. And there's a lot of interest, and we want to just drive those forward. Mm. There are delays in planning. With that, there's been significant requests for further information, which will mean that of those 5 offshore wind farms, it's unlikely that most, if any of them, will actually be electrified by the end of the decade. What I'm going to be focusing on is making sure they're under construction.
Okay, but so, are you not conflicted? As Minister for the Environment, for example, you've got a responsibility, say, to the seabed marine environment in Dublin Bay.
Yeah.
And yet, as Minister for Energy, you want to see as many windmills built as possible. There is a potential conflict there.
I actually brought forward the marine planning legislation and was part myself and Malcolm Noonan, the last government, in expanding the marine protected areas. We went from 3% to 10%, and we're still committed to doing 30% of our marine area to be marine protected areas. I don't think there's a conflict, to say that respectfully. I think the...
No, but I mean the Dublin Bay one, the Kish proposal, you know, when that was given the permission, the outline permission years and years ago, it not as much was known about what was happening in terms of fishing grounds, breeding grounds and so on. Now, you may say in 20 years time when the things are built, you'll have loads of fish swimming around and breeding there. But that's in 20 years time.
Look,
they will recover.
I think we got to look at I don't think there's a conflict between climate and energy at all. If anything, they're complementary. And why I say that is because if we can harness the potential of our offshore wind, we're looking at in the first phase, you know, up to about 4 gigawatts of power. And then we're moving forward with what we call our national DMAP, which is the plan for the rest. So we'll have another auction for the southeast. We have an opportunity in the near term in this country to become energy secure with our own energy. Okay, we have a target of 80% renewables by 2030. We're projecting just short of that, but not that significantly short of it at the moment. But in the early 2030s, that with these offshore wind, is that what we're going to have is the vast majority of the energy that we consume, but that the energy that we produce will be renewables.
Which means a huge investment in the grid to make that
possible.
It
does, but it also, and I'll come to that now, but it means reducing our dependency on fossil, reducing our emissions on energy substantially, okay, and reducing our dependence on gas and imported gas. Now, in relation to our grid, you're 100% correct. Yes, we need to invest in our grid, and just in the NDP for the first time, received €3.5 billion for AirGrid and ESBN to invest in the grid through the NDP. But fundamentally, what that's going to do is allow them to leverage from that equity investment we've put through to invest about 15 billion, I say billion euro, in our grid between now and 2030 to improve its resilience, to improve our generation capacity and our distribution capacity. And that's critically important because that underpins everything we do. It underpins housing, economic development, public transport, all of the things we've spoken about.
Now, the peculiar thing, all the things you mentioned in the last government were your responsibility as Minister for Housing,
yes.
Planning, and you brought in this new planning. People are saying this new planning act is not fit for purpose.
No, they're not.
a lot of them are. It's not going to speed anything up.
I believe it will.
And before you and I were talking about this, and I said, look, why don't you just have a rules based system? Everyone knows where they are. What's happening now? The new minister is putting in this thing where there's loads of exemptions, exactly the kind of proposal we had. Let people know where they stand and they can go and build.
Can I just turn to the Planning Act itself? Like, it took 3 years to write and to get through the Dáil. There was incredible amount of consultation with all sectors.
A lawyer's charter.
No, I don't believe so. If anything, I think in some instances the lawyers might be the most unhappy with this, because what we've ensured that we do is to set specific timelines with An Coimisiún Pleanála to reform what was An Bord Pleanála, which was critically important. What Minister Brown is doing now is actually commencing that act, and he's put it so the act will be fully commenced through the course of this year. So from early next year, we'll be operating under a new planning environment that is very clear, that provides consistency, clarity and time frame, and still respects people's right to make observations.
But we talk about your last tenure in the context of the Planning Act, which, of course, you'll have to operate your current roles. But I see the targets that you set for housing, they've been doubled, more than doubled. So did you get it wrong? 33,000 to 80,000.
Yeah, no, I think the context of that is under the National Planning Framework, okay? And what James has also asked the local authorities, and rightly so, is to zone more land to provide more housing. And housing is still our number one priority in this government. We made progress in the last government. We built 135,000 new homes. We tackled vacancy, brought affordable homes in for the first time in a generation. But we need to do a lot more, Pat, unquestionably. I do believe the Planning Act is going to help. It's going to help us streamline development across all government departments and indeed the private and commercial sector.
Some of the comments coming in. Life in Dublin, in the suburbs especially, has become more unpleasant since scooters and high-powered bikes have become popular. They zoom past you on footpaths, never signal. They're usually male users, and there's always a sense of aggression and misogyny about them. Enforcing a law around this behaviour, an utter joke. And another one, the minister obviously doesn't come across the Alfie Byrne Road. I'm sure you do, Minister. Cycle lane across through East Wall is ridiculous. If a car is turning right onto Church Road or the East Road, it causes a major delay as the cycle lane changed this main road into one lane from two. It's madness.
Yeah, no, I know the Alfie Byrne Road as well. And look, there are compromises in relation to creating safe cycleways and walkways as well, and how that interacts with the public road network. You know, I think, as I said, there are more people moving towards public transport now. To be honest, it can be easier to get into Dublin in particular using public transport than it is driving into. But the reality of it is that there are compromises to be made if we want to make it safer for people to walk and cycle in any of our cities, and indeed in our urban areas and rural.
All right, Les, a couple of quick things.
Sure.
EVs, there's going to be more infrastructure, that's for sure,
yes.
For charging.
Yes.
Any further breaks in terms of tax breaks or incentives to go EV?
First two quarters of this year, we've seen big increases in EV registrations. So people are responding. I want to make sure that at the very least we can maintain what is there for a five-year period. Budgets are only done in an annual cycle, but I have met with the sector on this, and we'll be looking at proposals between now and budget. One area I'm particularly looking at is rural areas and users of EVs in rural areas. Yes. Is there something we can do there specifically?
And any extra cash for retrofit of housing?
What I'm doing at the moment is, I don't think it's about extra cash. This year we're going to do very well. We're going to retrofit about 64,500 homes, which is great. What I want the grants to be more accessible to people. In some instances, the deep retrofit grants, whilst they're very substantial, it requires a lot of investment from a family. And sometimes that's out of reach for many families. And what I want to do is maybe break those grants down to make them more accessible to people, so you can do them on a phased basis. And that's what I want to do. I'm working on that at the moment.
Dara O'Brien, Minister for Climate, Energy, the Environment and Minister for Transport. All of those things. Okay.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.